Okay, so thank you everyone for joining me on this journey through Shar HaGemul. Today is our 20th and final class on Shar HaGemul. And while there is much more material to be covered in there, what I really tried to do was select what I thought were highlights in the Sefer, and particularly areas that I thought, based on your feedback, might be of more interest. So what we're going to do today is we're going to really wrap up our discussion about the nature of Gan Eden, and then we're going to look at the classic machlokus, the classic disagreement between the Rambam and Ramban when it comes to their conceptions of the world to come, of Olam Haba. And with that, we will conclude the Sefer. We'll actually look at the end of the Sefer, how he ends it. So is there any, you know, before we jump in, were there any other questions or things that were on our mind about the Sefer before we come to a conclusion today? Where everyone's like, I'm just ready to get to Rev Lichtenstein already.
No, I want to get to the conclusions.
Okay. All right, here we go. Let me share the screen. And here we are. So, first of all, I want to wrap up Gan Eden. So remember I told you how Rambam believes that Gan Eden is not just a spiritual plane where the souls go to after they depart from the bodies. It's not where someone goes immediately after they die, assuming they performed majority good deeds in their life. But there's also a physical manifestation, a physical place on earth, which is where the whole story of Genesis takes place at the beginning. So this is where the Ramban talks about it. And Ramban, like many others, wonders, wait, if it's a real physical place, why have we not discovered it yet? I mean, especially today, that should be a question that occurs to us. Many people have explored so many parts of the world, you would think if there's an angel standing outside with a fiery sword spinning around, somebody would have picked up on it by now, right? So here, there's a physical Gan Eden and there's a metaphysical Gan Eden. And what great reward and pleasure awaits the righteous who merit to go to this garden. There is a karbataro betora perusha devre sofrim shegan Eden matzahu ba'olam hazeh b'makom mukomos ha'aretz. However, it is evident from our tradition and from the books of our rabbis that Gan Eden is a place on earth as well. And how do we know that? Well, if you look in the Torah, Sha'ar B'Nahoris Yotz Misham, it talks about the four rivers that come out from there. Ve'ech mehem Paras HaSovias Eretz Yisrael, and one of them is Paras, which encircles Eretz Yisrael. So it doesn't have to literally mean circle, because if you look, there is no river that encircles all of the land of Israel. So I think in the note he points out what that refers to. Let's see in 518. Vasher Al Shem Shu Litzad Safon, the Gan Litzad Mizrach. So I think it's talking about the Kinneret. It's talking about the water that goes down the eastern end of Israel. Since it seems to cover a good portion of the north of Israel and the east of Israel, he refers to it as encircling Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. But as we know, there's no river that literally encircles Eretz Yisrael completely. Everything that says in Bereshit is literal and is true. And even though Ramban, and this is not something we're not getting into, we're going to pull an art scroll. So the art scroll translation of Ramban, as I love pointing out, I've done this on numerous occasions, the blue art scroll Ramban for his commentary on Torah, whenever it gets to the hardest part, which is where he starts making all these Kabbalistic, mystical statements and assertions, that's when art scroll says, so this part of Ramban is beyond the scope of this translation. And I say, great, why did I buy the Sefer? This is the part that I needed for the most. So I'm going to pull an art scroll and say, we're not going to go through all that stuff because it gets very technical and very abstract. And at some points, I'm not even sure if he knows what he's talking about. say that. I mean, I'm sure he does, but it gets very, very odd. So rest assured to say that even if one does not buy into all the mystical assumptions, even Ramban says, "E mikra mehen yotzei midei pshuto," that we have to also understand the scriptures on a literal level. So here, this is a famous line here for those who study the Ramban. This is a line to remember. Where is Gan Eden located? What's the Kav HaShvia? The line that is equal. What's it sound like? The equator. So he says, according to many people, many scholars, it is found under the equator. Shel Yosef HaYom V'Leyechzar. It's a place where day is not added and night is not subtracted. It's a place where there's equal daytime and equal nighttime. I'm pretty sure that's true scientifically, right? For the equator? No?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. Anyway, so his belief, based on the scholars that he read, is that it is found under the equator. Now, what was Ramban reading that led him to this assumption? So this is where things get fun. So Ma'aseh Mesupar B'Sifrei HaRefuah. So he's going to tell us a story that is found in the books of the Greek healers. B'Sifrei HaRefuah Sivan Hakamon. So if one looks in the books of the Greek scholars, the Greek healers, V'chein B'Sifrei Asaf HaYehudi, Yisabruki Askelifinos Chacham Makdoni. So this Greek scholar, Barboim Ishmin Achartuim, and 40. I mean, literally means like sorcerers or magicians, but I guess witch doctors, whatever you want to, however you want to translate that. They went on an expedition. Milumdei Asofrim, Hogu Holoch Baris. They went on an expedition. For Avru Me Avar Lahodu Kidmas Eden Lintoksas Atzei Rafuos Vaat VeEitzachayim. So they went east of Turkey. And they went to discover Gan Eden. They wanted to find where Gan Eden is. Why? What do you think was in Gan Eden that healers would want to find for themselves? What would be the great prize awaiting them?
Tree of knowledge.
Tree of knowledge. Or what's the main job of a doctor? To keep someone alive, right? So imagine if you were a doctor and you found the Eitz HaChaim. You found the Tree of Life. You know, you put Big Pharma out of commission, right? Or you would become Big Pharma. You'd have a monopoly, right? If you have Eitz Chaim, that's it. All other drugs are useless compared to it. They're obsolete. Laman Tigdel Tifartam Akol Chachmeir. So they want to discover this so that they could, you know, get a Nobel Prize, so they could get the accolades from all the other wise men of the earth. By the way, this is I'm pointing out again, it's Ramban's cynicism that we've noted before when it comes to some of the non-Jewish scholars. He says, why are they going out? Now, I would say, why would a doctor go on an expedition to find the Tree of Life? Out of the goodness of his heart. He wants to help people, right? So what's Ramban say? He has to throw in that line over there. Why they go out? They wanted to get the prestige of discovering the cure. So maybe if he was alive during coronavirus right now, he'd be saying, yeah, why did that person sponsor that drug research? They wanted their name on it. They wanted their name on the plaque. I don't know how you conceptualize that. But that's what he's saying here as well. So then, did they succeed on this expedition? Well, sort of. When they actually did succeed in locating the place of where Gan Eden is located, but then what happened? But then the fiery sword struck them down. And struck them like with a lightning strike of sorts. You know, it gets very Dungeons and Dragons like there. There's like 2d10 damage, and they all perished while they went on the expedition. So they located Gan Eden, but the angels that were guarding it struck them down when they approached Gan Eden. Lo nimlat mehem ish, and no one survived, which is my favorite part of the story, because I always love it when there's a story but no one survived to tell the tale. Then how do we know it ever happened?
How do we know?
What?
I said, how do we know?
Right. So how do we know it ever happened? You know, it's like when you, I think I like got told some of these like Tzaddikim stories, and they always ended off about, and then when this person went up to Gan Eden, or he went up to the basin Shalmaila and they judged him, they sent him straight down to Gehenna for all of his sins. I said, wait, who is there to tell us that that happened? How do we know that ever occurred? So he says, Uchuvos chokmas arfuam in agoyim ahein yomim rabim ar maloch atar chashishta hamelech. As many days until this king arose, Bachari Kain, it's Chachbem Dasa Rafua, Idena Kuvim B'Shem V'Lachai. So what they said was, the medical world at that time took a huge hit because of all the scholars that were lost. And it was only in the days of Atar Chashishta, I think it's Persian, if I'm not mistaken, when he rose to the throne, that's when they were able to bring Rafua back. You know, they made medicine great again. But until that point, it wasn't that great. And Ramban is, this isn't a Jewish assertion. This was something that just Jews believed. This is something that Ramban's reading, you know, history back then was kind of like, anyone could write a history book and just make things up. When it came to Josephus, for instance, anyone ever read Josephus' account of the mass suicide of Masada? Are we familiar with that in general? So there's the whole entire story at the destruction of the Second Temple when the Romans are invading. So they were going to invade Masada, but when they got to Masada, they saw everyone was dead. I think for a woman and a child, perhaps. I'm forgetting the exact detail, but. The thing is that Josephus wasn't actually there to see everything. So he just took some of his own understanding of what happened at Jotapata, where he was, at another suicide. And the theory among academics is that he really just fabricated many of the details of the story based off his own knowledge of war and based off rumors that he heard. So collecting history back then, you know, today the popular thing to do is to say, well, that's your narrative and that's that person's narrative and you see things in different ways, and there's some truth to that, but history today is far more objective than it was in yesteryear. But nonetheless, Ramban is working with what he has, and this isn't like a Jewish belief about this story. This is something that the Greeks all believe. They believe this was the news, so he has no reason to deny it. So now, how do we know that this happened? So, right, Audrey? So here is his statement where he says that there were many people who stood from afar. They didn't get too close to Gan Eden, but they could see the angels with the fiery swords in their hands that was constantly spinning. So I don't know if they saw everyone get killed, but supposedly, there are those who report that they saw these angels with their swords of flame. And everyone back then, including Ramban, seemed to believe that that was true. Now, the question is, you make such a monumental discovery, such as the location of Gan Eden, how did we ever lose that? Now, you would think that's something that people would note from generation to generation. You think that's something that would be on the map, at least. You know, we'd find an ancient map with that. So it's very odd. But the takeaway from here is that Ramban believes that there is a physical location of Gan Eden on Earth. How we discover it and how we lost it, I don't know. But that is his belief, so that's something to note. Okay, any questions? That's the end of Gan Eden, by the way. Not the end of Gan Eden, but the end of our studies in Gan Eden. We'll spend the rest of our time just looking at Olam Haba and the major dispute when it comes to that. Do we have any questions before we move forward? Okay. So let me ask you a question. When we all die eventually, and then God brings us back to life, and we go into the world to come for eternity, God willing, how do you conceive yourself as being in a body, or do you imagine yourself as a spirit? You know, if I were to say, like, imagine what Ol Mahaba looks like. Do you imagine it looks like this earth right now, just maybe utopian in nature? Or does it look like something completely different altogether? How did you guys always imagine what Ol Mahaba looks like? Okay, I can't say for sure there's no wrong answers, but chances are you'll agree with one of the Rishonim here.
I guess I just always thought it would look like this world, but with no war, with no disease, with no hunger, but that it would look like this world.
Mm-hmm. So good. So that's the Ramban's belief. So Toby's takes the side of the Ramban. You're a good company. So how else? Did anyone perceive it differently than Toby? Did anyone perceive it as something otherworldly, something more supernatural? So the irony of what we're going to see is that there's a dispute between the Rambam and Ramban.
What else is new?
What else is new? So here's the chronology. According to Ramban, what happens is there is the era of Mashiach, the Messiah. God revives the dead. And then God just basically leaves us alive. He brings us into an era of Olam Haba. But Olam Haba is essentially, we still have our gufim, we still have our bodies. And it's like a utopia of sorts. But Rambam says no. And there was this historical controversy where so you know how they burned the Rambam's books, Maimonides. They burned his books because for a number of reasons. They thought it was heretical.
But who was the they? Who did the burning?
So Rabbeinu Yonah, I believe, uh-huh. And many of the rabbis who are alive at that time took the Mor Nevuchim, his Guide for the Perplexed, and I think other books, and they burned it. So these are Jews. These are Jewish people because Rambam was, you know, today Rambam is very from. But back then, a Jew engaging in philosophy to the extent that Rambam did, and I'll tell you why also, Rambam takes a lot of controversial positions that Ramban disagrees with. This is just one of them. For instance, this is very relevant for Sefer Bereishis that we're in right now. You remember the whole story of going to Sodom and Gomorrah and the Anamora and the angels destroy the city and they save Lot. So that whole thing, according to Rambam, was just a dream. They believe that Avram was seeing a nevuah of sorts. God was sending him a moral message, but none of that ever took place historically, which is pretty crazy, I think. I mean, definitely, I don't think there's any preschool teacher that teaches the kids, yeah, by the way, and then he woke up and the story was over. You know, it's like in a movie or a book, La Havdil, you know, like it's like this really crazy thing, like, oh my gosh, what just happened? Why everyone's dying, Gaber? And then he wakes up in a cold sweat. So that's almost how the Rambam understands it. So he took a lot of controversial positions. So one of them was that many thought that Rambam denied the revival, the reincarnation of the dead. But in the end of the day, you know, did Rambam clarify? Whatever happened, Rambam clarifies. In his conception, this is the order of events. There is Mashiach. Everyone gets revived. The righteous get revived during Mashiach. But then only to die again and to ascend to Olam Haba, which is a fully metaphysical experience. Which is ironic when you think about it, because usually Rambam is the rationalist and Ramban is the mystic. So if you were to ask me, how would a rationalist conceive Olam Haba, how would a mystic? I would say a rationalist would see things more mundane, see things more like this world. And I would say that a mystic would see things more metaphysical. But for some reason, again, maybe this requires more analysis to go through all the arguments up until this point. Rambam says the opposite. He says that we become spirits, and Ramban says we maintain our bodies. So let's read it inside. This is really the summary. These are the last pages in Shar HaGmul. There was so much discourse until this point explaining the rationales for Rambam and Ramban, but this should make an adequate summary for our purposes. So he's referring to the Rambam. So what did the Rambam say? So we understand until this point what the Rambam said, what we just explained. In fact, it wasn't just the Rambam, but Ramban says there are many Sephardic wise men, many Sephardic rabbis in their liturgy that seem to just assume like the Rambam based on their wording. For instance, if you look in the prayer of Rav Shlomo Ibn Gavriel, which is found, we don't really say this, but it's found in the Yom Kippur liturgy on Kol Nidre night. V'achacham Rav Shlomo Ibn Gavriel, Zichrono Lebracha, Amar Bitfiloso Keser Malchus. What does he write? He writes, Tachas Kisei Kvodecha, Ma'amad L'nafashos Chasidecha. So under your throne is the place where the souls of your righteous dwell. Loose translation. So he says, nefashos, not the bodies, the souls of the righteous dwell, which implies that they are no longer in their bodies. Ubo noam bli tachas or kitzavahu olam haba. And this is what olam haba is. Those are his words. The chen yispala, further he says, ubeis min olam hazeh totziani, and when you take me out from this world, el olam haba b'shalom tivi'ani, bring me in peace to the world to come. And the implication, I don't think explicitly from there, but the implication from this prayer, a Sephardic prayer also, is that the soul is what lives on, but the body is just, you know, revived momentarily. The Rambam, it's almost silly when you think about it, because what's the point of reviving the body? According to Rambam, one dies, their body gets revived temporarily during the times of the Messiah, only to die again and to ascend to Olam Haba. So what was the point of reincarnation? Just for another short while, only to become a soul? You know, leave me as a soul then. Don't make me go back to my body and then become a soul again. So it seemed that Rambam always believed that one should really be a soul, but because our faith believes in reincarnation, he had to like say, yeah, there's reincarnation for a little bit, but then we become souls for good, and that's it. So that's his school of thought. But then the Ramban says, that's what the Rambam says. Avolanu shomen shamar kalacha. But we know what things are really supposed to be like. Ivan adar b'reis b'tivar asein as zichron lebracha. And if you look earlier in Shar HaGemul, all the sections that we skipped, Ramban says, I have explicated my proofs there. V'shuv matzasi lagon rav sadia. So he's marshaling proof, or at least those who agree with him, from Rav Sadia Gon. If you look in his explanation to Sefer Daniel, Sho'omer Kidvarim, Befir Shalom Haba, V'chein b'tfilos of humisval, and in the prayers of Rav Sadia Gon, he says, Yamein v'yigdal shemecha ad olam, that your name should be praised and magnified forever, V'kabetzi d'cheinu, and you'll gather all those who are exiled, live in those space, make the shenu, rebuild the temple, lahach yos es mesenu, and you will revive those who are dead, lotziam or lotzianu b'shalom imeha yeshua el ha'olam haba asher tzafan tolanu. You'll bring us out in salvation to olam haba. V'chol ma'isa b'reishis yichav lo molinu v'gam. And his understanding from here is, I don't really see it explicitly in the prayer, but he seems to say that the implication from this prayer of Sadia Gon also is that we come back to this world, but ultimately, sorry, not that we come back to this world, but what happens is when we leave this world, we become a soul, and then the idea is that we are brought back into our bodies again. Because why? Because he says we're rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. And since Olam Haba is we're rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash, which is a physical building, we are going to be Oh, sorry. Yeah, we will be bodies. V'kabalas rishom hi torosam al tishkach. And he says, yep, this is what those earlier than me said. Ramban is a rishon. He's medieval. Rasadia Gon, I don't remember the exact year, but Gaonim are before Rishonim. So we're talking before medieval times now. That was Rasadia Gon's belief. So here is the final summary in the end. But Ramban says, after all is said and done, after dust clears, other than this one machlokas, other than this one argument, Rambam and Ramban, aside for a few details, they really are all on the same page when it comes to Jewish dogma, when it comes to our belief system. Everyone agrees that there is reincarnation. And all the generalities and the details. Aside from what the Rambam said, that he puts a time limit on reincarnation, only to die again. Everyone eventually goes back to the world of the souls. Other than that, you know, aside for some minor nuances, Rambam, Ramban, the both of us were good buddies, we're on the same page, and there aren't any other major disagreements. We both believe in the eternity of life. We believe, and it's the most important thing, which is, in the end of the day, whether one's a body, whether one's a soul, however that manifests, that's important, but in the end of the day, it's really, they both agree that there is a concept of eternity of the soul, whether that soul is purely a soul or remains in some form of a body in this world. We can disagree about that, he says, but we believe in the guiding, overarching principle. V'adon harachamim yaskinu letov asher tzofan liyareyev apola avadav man rachamim v'chasodav amen v'amen. And may the Lord grant us all of this goodness that has been described in this book. And may God let us merit to ultimately enjoy the benefits of Olam Haba, Amen ve'Amen. That's how Ramban concludes this Sefer. Obviously, we didn't look at everything in between, but this is his ending. His ending is, after all is said and done, after all the disagreements that I show between myself, Rambam, and others, we believe in the overarching principles that there is justice, that those who have done good will get the reward, those who have done evil will get their just deserts in the world to come, and that that reward is something that is everlasting and is invaluable. So that is his conclusion to the Sefer, and that is our conclusion to our studies of Shaar HaGemul together. So Yashar Koach, everyone. I know it's been a while, but it was 20 classes. And Toby, I can see you have a question. So what do you got for us?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I'm hung up on the incarnation. What is the point of reincarnation, just to die again?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, so what is, exactly. I mean, what's the point of that?
So that's that, exactly.
And how long does reincarnation last for?
Right, so here's the thing. So because of the issue you're raising, which is not only your question, it's raised by many, is that it seems almost silly. Why bother bringing us back just for a short while to Olam Haba? Now, Mashiach could last like be 1,000 years. So, you know, you could be around for a while, actually. But compared to eternity, that's really nothing. So that's my point, that there was a suspicion that Rambam actually didn't believe in reincarnation. But then because...
But it's one of his 13 principles of faith, right?
So it is, right. So Rambam does list reincarnation as part of Jewish dogma. But there, you know, again, this is, it's been a while since I looked into it. I think maybe Mark Shapiro deals with it because he has that book, The Limits of Orthodox Theology, which is how he goes through. It was actually a book I was thinking of doing, but it's really like, it's really thick. It's almost like it's less essays, more like an encyclopedia. And each essay, he goes through one principle from Rambam's 13 principles, and he shows how each one was disputed, and how each one there are some caveats and some qualifications. But that's the whole thing. It sounds almost like Rambam, this is what leads people to speculate that Rambam didn't believe fully in reincarnation. He believed in eternity of the soul, but he didn't believe that we are brought back to this earth. Those who were already alive got to live through the era of Mashiach, but those who were dead weren't being brought back because of that point. So then Rambam needed to later on to go in and say, yeah, you know, there is reincarnation, but since he didn't really believe in it as a central piece of eschatology like Rambam did, that's why you have this almost silly is not the right word, but this almost, you know, just odd temporary reincarnation. What's the point of it? So I agree with that, Toby, with your question. And I think the question, you know, sometimes they say the kash is better than the terence. The question's better than the answer. So many have been troubled by this, and I appreciate you raising it. And I, you know, if they couldn't give a good answer, I don't know if I could give a satisfactory answer either.
One more?
Sure.
When the Rambam talks about the soul, or the spirit rather, he's not really talking about the same thing that Ramban is he? Because I always thought that for Rambam, basically, it consisted of the white matter. And it's, I almost picture, you know, Olam Haba from his point of view as just, you know, this wonderful gathering of brains and intellect.
Right. So it's
not, when I think of, you know, spirit or soul, I'm thinking more here, not here.
Yes. So that's something important. I'm glad you brought that up as well. When one reads the Rambam, and it's not just the Rambam, you know, if you look at Ralbag, you look at other medieval Jewish rationalist philosophers, as I'm just Jewish, actually, it's almost like more of a Greek way of thinking. Mm-hmm. The intellect is what separates man from animal, and that the intellect is what is divine. In fact, you know, God's providence, I think, is referred to as the divine intellect. So Rambam's conception in general is that the more someone knows, the more intellectual they are, the closer they are to God, which is the source of all knowledge. And right, so Rambam's conception is like, at the end of the days, you have the tzaddikim, the righteous, surrounding God. It's like there's just this, like, this big brain fest going on almost. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, there's a letter that Rambam wrote, forgot it was to his son or one of his students, I need to find it, where he says that Aristotle nearly achieved the level of prophecy, which is startling. Like, Aristotle? Why Aristotle? You know, I can think of a lot of good candidates before Aristotle. He said because Aristotle was so wise and his intellect was so great that the only requisite he was missing was Jewish religiosity. Had he believed in Judaism, had he followed Judaism, and with that level of intellect that he had, he could have achieved a level of prophecy. Because, right, for Rambam, it is the intellect of someone that truly defines them. So, yes, that is another critical factor. Maybe if one day we study Mor Nevuchim, the guide for the perplexed, that is something we can go into more depth. And by the way, if you think this sefer gets technical, and very thick, Rambam's guide for perplexed, you're in for something. I'll tell you that much. Okay. Toby, those are great questions. Anyone else have any concluding thoughts or questions they would like to share? Okay. So again, I,
thank you.
Yashar Koach to everyone, you know, take out a shot of some schnapps. Have a little time, right?
You have to wait till Shabbos?
Yeah, it's like I got a physical and they asked me how often I drink alcohol. I'm like, I'm on Shabbos, you know?
Right.
Excuse me, can I interrupt? I have a question for you ladies. Do you know the name or number of the store off High Ridge? The guy belongs to the shul, or used to anyway, that fixes vacuum cleaners?
Yes. Oh, it's Al Beeson.
Yes, right.
And, he's on Cedar Heights Road.
Cedar Heights, yes.
What he calls that little shop, I'm not sure. But if you look, you know, if you look it up, under, you know, repairs or appliance repair or whatever, look for the one that's on Cedar Heights Road, and that'll be him.
Thank you. Thanks, Toby. Thank you.
For, why for ladies only? Us men vacuum sometimes too. I mean, I personally don't, but.
Have a good day, everybody. I'm sorry.
Okay, great. The, so remember,
yes,
we are off this coming week. This will be our Hafsaka, so to speak. And it gives us enough time to order the book. If you do not have the details, email me. I'll resend you the link that you can order. Enjoy Thanksgiving. Agudas Shalom is having programming, actually, during that our shear times, partially. So at 10 Thank o'clock, you. We're going to the police station, afterwards the firehouse, and then afterwards to EMS. So I encourage you all to look at the emails if you feel safe enough to come outside and see and show our appreciation. I look forward to seeing you there.
In the meantime, don't forget this Sunday, Rabbi Tendler, and right. Monday night, Rabbi Kurtz is part of the New England Rabbis.
Yes. Okay.
Will the link for Rabbi Tendler be put on?
It'll be in the daily virtual. It's already in the Shabbos bulletin. It's the same.
But link. I didn't see the link. You know,
so it's this link. It's the usual. Oh. There's only like two main links that go that we use, either Rabbi Cohen's or
yours. Okay. So great.
It'll be this link.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. Have a great one.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
Bye.
Good Shabbos, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.